Like this is the one that we really celebrate very actively. Of course, we do Diwali and tons of things during the year, but this is the one where like the entire family is like on point. Like,
That's nice, actually. Devi worship has that thing.
yeah, which is why I think like it's awesome that we're doing like a female guest on the show like during Navratri. I think that's brilliant, right? Like.
Oh my God, I'm so privileged.
I'm super delighted to have author of two books now, Sai Swarupa Iyer, joining me on the show today. We're going to be talking about publishing in India, a little bit about her journey as well. It's Saturday, September 23, and this is Drishti Talk. Sai Swarupa, welcome on the show.
Thank you, Chirag. I'm really delighted to interact with you. I'm delighted that it's happening during this auspicious occasion of Navratri.
Exactly. I think what better occasion, right, to talk about your work, especially considering the dharmic angle to it. I don't know if you came across. In fact, just this morning, Swaraj has published a piece by Alok Kumar, where he says, the time is like perfect now for dharmic fiction to take over.
Oh yes, I just happened to read it because even Alok happened to forward it to me as well, and I guess I agree with him on many fronts.
Of course. Let's start with your journey first. So you were an investment. That's what you were doing full time, and then you becoming an author. What triggered that?
Becoming an author was there in my mind, I guess, from a very long time. I just took my own time realizing it. Whereas investment banking, actually not. I worked with a venture capital firm, not an iBank. So that was a job, and unfortunately, I loved my job. Although I know a lot of others have the luxury of hating their job and turning to banking, yeah, I really liked my job because the best part of it was I got to meet entrepreneurs, and everybody has a solution for some problem, unlike many other professions where you hear only problems. So I think in a way, apart from family and the reading that the family inculcated me into, even my job had a role in inspiring me to become an author. So I do have some inspiration. I do carry some inspiration from VC industry as well whenever I write.
No, that's wonderful. Was it something? I mean, so you mentioned that you've had a little bit of a writing streak in you, like from the beginning. But what was there a specific event, for example, that triggered the move? Or it was just you just started writing on the side, and then since it became a thing, you decided that's what you wanted to focus on.
It's I used to love and even now I love Telugu literature a lot. Given the Rasa element, my favorite happens to be Andhra Mahabhagavatam by Bammira Pothana. So if you observe the differences between the Sanskrit Bhagavatam and Pothana's Andhra Mahabhagavatam, it's like the poet has poured a lot of emotional value into the each of the poems, and that has actually enhanced the meaning that the Vyas Bhagavan would have wanted us to imbibe. So that the poetical angle was something which always intrigued me. And back in my 2008 or something, that was when I was introduced to this series called Krishnavatara, which was written by K.M. Munshi. Right, that was I call that as a trigger because that's what I call as a perfect combination of ancient knowledge combined with the poetic liberty, right? And I think that's what inspired me to write my story as well. I owe a lot of the perseverance to my husband and my mother because they were like a constant source of encouragement for me.
Well, I won't actually talk about both your books, but we'll talk a little bit about Amishi first because that's the one that you're currently talking about, and so on. Tell us a little bit about like you know, the inspiration behind the book and the story.
Ah, the inspiration behind the book, interestingly, came when I was writing a very early draft of Abhaya, which is my first book. The feedback given on an early draft by a lot of author friends was to invest on the characters, which is a feedback I value even a lot today. And so while actually observing and meditating on the characters, I started writing scenes which make them look real, you know, independent of the story plot. That's an exercise I do even today. So one of the exercises was, you know, to show the bonding between a father and daughter. So I was, writing a scene where Abhaya's father is narrating a story to Abhaya. So he's a king and a warrior, and obviously he would want his daughter to listen to inspirational stories. Now my challenge was, Abhaya is set in the times of Mahabharata, and you know, I had to find a woman who will inspire Abhaya and who has to be older than, you know, whose times has to be older than the times of Mahabharata, right? I started researching for some older woman characters. A lot of them were Rishikas and philosophers, and it would be too terse to narrate the story of a philosopher to a six-year-old girl. So it had to be somebody, you know, more adventurous. And so I started exploring the Rigveda, which is the oldest source of, you know, very interesting characters from our ancient past. And that was when I came across this woman called Vishpala, who is a warrior. Vishpala actually means head of a settlement, right? And Vishpala loses her leg in a battle called Kailas Battle. And she is granted a metal leg, a prosthetic leg, by the twin gods Ashwinas. Actually, this is a hymn dedicated to Ashwinas. Just take a moment and think about a woman who can fight with a prosthetic leg. That is something which we would consider a miracle.
Even in our ages, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. So that really intrigued me. And, I couldn't help, stopping writing Abhaya and starting fantasizing about Vishpala. I mean, her strength, her will, and, what could have been the situation which really prodded her to fight with a prosthetic leg. And another discovery that I made was, this is the world's first reference to the very concept of prosthesis. So even the medical journals on the topic from Israel and US have actually shared the link, at the back of my book, the Kindle edition. So even they speak a lot about the Rigvedic mention of prosthesis in this. And I started feeling a bit unhappy that we don't speak about it as much as we should be speaking about. So that was when I decided to revisit the story of Vishpala, once I was done publishing Abhaya. Guess the Rigvedic gods were happy with my prayer. And
and we're seeing this, I think, a lot now, just because of the way the conversation and discourse is going on in India in general, where we're sort of going back, to our roots and to our to a lot of things. Like you mentioned, we have mentions of things from, way, way back in our history, pointing to, highlighting this kind of visionary thought, if nothing else, right? I think, which is why, Alok's piece was super interesting to me coincidentally, it showed up this morning, and I thought to myself, wow, could not have been better timing. But, the concept of what he says, dharmic fiction, where it's sort of a really interesting way to reintroduce, the fact that we have that history and that depth of culture. Which is not something.
Actually, it has been always there, Chirag. But only thing is, English literature and popular English literature is realizing it, in the last decade or so. In the regional literature, it existed, and it existed even, in its all its glory. So that's something. So it's good.
Yeah, exactly. It's of course absolutely positive, and I'm super glad as well. That very simple example, I know, but I mean, I grew up reading like Enid Blyton, right? I didn't grow up reading any of this.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Exactly.
And even whatever whatever direction I took from a religious or a cultural standpoint, I mean, came way later, and it came out of my parents wanting to introduce me to it, but I don't think we had that much access and that much freedom. The ease of reaching these texts, especially the regional language ones, especially when you're living in cities and things like that, is not as easy.
Actually, what happened, I mean, you know, this is my limited observation, but the early English literature, which was delving into this topic, it was, I think, the oldest writers in English literature I can remember would be Maharshi Aurobindo and Swami Vivekananda. And they happen to be, you know, philosophers par excellence. And, you know, the next generation, we would have, you know, expected, you know, some writers who delved into the adventure and romance part of it. But unfortunately, you know, that the next generation, I think, went the other side, or, you know, they failed to grasp it. So,
yeah, it's important. Sure.
Marvel. Yeah. And yes. So now it's happening. So I think we should all be really happy about it. And
I mean, I think it's a decent segue, but let's talk about the publishing side of it, right? Because that's what we're discussing now in terms of, you know, the reach of these books and things like that. What is it that made you, I mean, because I know you've taken the self-publishing route.
Actually, there's an experience that I'd like to recount. You know, when I was done with a very early draft of Abhaya, and then, you know, when I started looking for a publisher, a typical route was to hire a literary agent, so, and that, you know, make him or her, you know, give him the responsibility of selling that manuscript to a publisher who'd take it. And there'd be, between the author and the literary agent, there would be, you know, some kind of editorial feedback, because the agent supposedly knows better about the market than the author knows, which sounds reasonable. So this particular agent, I would not want to take his name, but once he started giving me feedback and, you know, started mentoring me to rewrite the draft, I discovered sometime down the line that I was hating my own writing. Because it was, you know, it was not honest, right? It could, maybe it was fitting the market standards according to him, but, you know, it wasn't just giving me the satisfaction of writing my own story. So I took a step back, and, that was the end of our contract. And it actually kind of, I stopped writing for, I think, almost some, you know, more than 14, 15 months. That was a period where I realized, you know, maybe, you know, he was pointing at some flaws which were actually there, but finding a solution and rewriting was, you know, something which is totally my journey to discover, and I'd rather not listen to his solutions or anyone's solution. So that was when I started, you know, we shifted to London from India, and, you know, I finally got time to sit and write full time. And by the time I had made, you know, friends with very good beta readers who used to read for me and, you know, give me live feedback, and all that helped. And, you know, that was, okay, painful writer's block of that 1.5 years, but it worked well for the rewrite. So that was when I, you know, I was totally a bit disillusioned with the publishing world, that, you know, and I was feeling very, very protective about the draft.
Obviously, yeah.
So that was when I, you know, hired an editor, Vrinda. So, and the experience of working with Vrinda was totally different from my past experience, because she totally understood the spirit of the story, the spirit of the characters, and the suggestions that she made actually improved the draft. So that was when I, you know, my faith was totally invested into self-publishing, so that, you know, it made me feel like, yo, I can hire a good editor and come up with a finished product which would be as good as traditionally published.
Yeah, and not having compulsions of, you know, the formal industry dictate, for example, as convert the story or lose the essence of the storyline.
Exactly. But, you know, hiring a professional editor is something which is a, you know, crucial journey whenever to someone taking the self-publishing route, because, you know, I know some writers who are super protective of their drafts, and they even, you know, don't take the editorial feedback that seriously, which is, you know, which proves to be tragic later. But yeah, I was fortunate to get a great editor. So
to some extent, I think that there are parallels that you can draw between you know, what used to be traditional columnists versus today, well, you know, everybody's a blogger, essentially. Maybe democratization is not the right word, but it's this sort of thing where now, you know, everybody has a voice and they can take that voice out faster and easier without the formal, not just the writing process, but even the editing process and all of that, right? So I think it's interesting in some ways it's good, right? Because obviously the formal industry does have its drawbacks, right? You know, I've spoken on this on previous podcasts as well, where we had a traditional, the entire publishing industry, but also the media and everything else, where it was essentially, you know, few people pushing their, you know, it was a one-way street of communication, which meant that...
Yes. And, you know, all my keeping my other peeves about the industry aside, they work in their own world of constraints, Chirag. So, you know, it wouldn't be very fair to blame them for everything, but
no, of course
it's not. Like, you know, yeah, they get hundreds of manuscripts and then there are different forces pushing their own manuscripts with their own muscle power, and you know, there are a lot of factors that come into, you know, when you are an editor in a traditional publishing house. And but being an author, it's like you have your own journey panned out and you can't wait forever for something to happen, right?
Yeah, precisely. And I think, like you said, we will put the, you know, our own peeves about the industry aside, you know, but we're talking purely in terms of, you know, what is purely the formal industry versus is sort of the informal industry, as we say, or the self-publishing side of things, right? Where you can take something that you did and share it with the world without not only the constraints and being one in a crowd of many, many hundreds, as you said, hundreds of manuscripts going through somebody. And instead you have now something that's live and reachable and directly connecting with the public. And then if it works, then that's awesome. And obviously, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but even then, you know, you might have some other publishers coming back and doing that. I mean, my own example, and if I had to loosely categorize myself, I would think of myself as an independent publisher in a way of content, right? Of some kind of content. Okay, my content is audio versus say, written content or whatever. But it's the same thing where if I wanted to actually start this off within the formal industry, I mean, I would never make it, or probably at least find it extremely difficult to do.
Yes. And I think I have to congratulate you there.
I mean, you know, that was, appreciate it. But I think it's super interesting. And I think social media is helping so much in this regard where, you know, not only has the internet helped put it out there, but then things like social media and stuff have helped.
Oh, social media is the backbone of, you know, it's very crucial.
Exactly. I think it's so amazing that today you can not only raise your voice, because I think, you know, sometimes when I look through my Twitter feed or things like that, there are moments, and I'm sure you have them too, right? There are moments when you see this and you think, you know, is allowing everybody to have a voice really the best use of our time? Because you read things and you want to pull somebody's hair out, right? Like it's so... you know, there are so many moments where we're like, I don't know if everybody should have a loudspeaker, you know, or whatever. But just the ability to interact with, you know, with, I mean, just anybody, I think is what's great, right? I mean,
sure, yeah. That happens. And, you know, because maybe, you know, we are finding a lot of noise out there because everybody is discovering this marvelous world. And I think with time, you know, the whole, you know, market has its own way of evolving. So it'll filter out the unreasonable voices and, you know, we'll again find the better voices having louder speakers. That's our hope. So let's see.
No, but I think that, you know, we are in this evolution stage, right? Where especially when we look at social media, we are still, there's a lot of discovery going on. Yes, there's a lot of noise and we can make fun of that. But the truth is there's some serious value, right? As I mentioned, your case, where I want to talk a little bit more about that too, the marketing side of things. But you know, where this allows people to interact with you, you get feedback that I think would be so difficult to get before. I mean, your feedback, and my own as well, like was always limited to people I know, my friends, versus today where I can, I actually have people who hear something I say or something I may tweet and respond to it. And then, of course, it's up to me to decide what I want to do with that response. But the fact that I can get it today so easily is mind-blowing.
I wouldn't say it that easily, Chirag, because it's very crucial to critical to get, you know, the relevant feedback from all the noise. But yes, you know, there is a possibility of reach, which is a big thing.
So let's talk about the marketing thing, because I know that's something I wanted to ask you more about. You know, when you wrote Abhaya, especially, starting out your first book, putting it out there, you know, how did you take it from there?
Oh, okay. That's an interesting journey. I mean, you know, I never had a marketing plan in mind, you know, the minute I hit the publish button, right? That was, you know, so many writers have this dream that, you know, the job gets over once they hit publish, you know, they can, and sales happen by miracle, and that miracle doesn't happen.
Yeah, not everything goes viral, as we know as well. Yeah.
Yes. And the thing is, the good thing with books is that there is no, especially fiction work, is that there's no shelf life to it. And, you know, the book has all life to sell it. And the whole process is reaching out to readers and reaching out to relevant readers, right? So many writers make this mistake of overtly depending on their friends and family, you know, for the necessary publicity, and they can't go more wrong. Of course, you know, we all have, you know, we are all very fortunate to have some friends who would go to rooftops shouting about what we've done, but you know, it's but that doesn't take us the requisite distance. Of course, they are very crucial in every writer's life or every publisher's life. But right way, you know, there is no one right way. But what I'd say is, every writer should invest some time learning about social media and learning about how to reach that relevant readers. Right, like. You know, there are many of these platforms. You know, Wattpad is one of them. Goodreads, you know, all of us know Goodreads. It's about building readership, you know, while you are building your content, right? That is something I discovered in the last 1.5 years. And, you know, blogging helped me, and presence on Twitter helped me. And that's something. So you start building these readers who value your content and who don't know you. They don't know you as a person. I think a lot of, you know, friends, as I call, you know, who have marketed my books, I have not even met them in person till now. That's really amazing. But there's a process of building that readership. And I think it's kind of unique for each person. I mean, you know, Twitter worked for me, and you know, Wattpad is working for me. But you know, for some people it's Facebook, for some people it's just ads. And you know, I know authors, very successful authors, who hate social media. You know, who call that a waste of time. But you know, they take to traditional you know, advertising, and you know, those Amazon ads and, you know, Facebook ads and those kind of methods. But yeah, each author, I think each of these platforms has a pulse, and you know, that has to match with the author's pulse as well. So it's a journey of discovery, Chirag.
I mean, and to me, like as you were describing that, I mean, it's not very different, you know, from being, say, an entrepreneur or something. You know, you have a product, and it works the same way, right?
So much like being an entrepreneur. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to get it to the right people with the right message. And then, of course, from there, you can choose, say, for example, traditional, where it's one-way communication. You can take social media, where it's sort of more interactive, and you're kind of building your base as you go. As you mentioned, I mean, you had, you know, people market your books because that's the level of interaction they had with you. Having written Abhaya and you know, essentially self-published it and then self-marketed it, would you have it a different way? Would you feel like if you had a, you know, more formal marketing plan or something? Because I know you've gone essentially the very similar route with Avishi, right?
No, there are parts of marketing that I started, you know, outsourcing, if we can use that word, about marketing Avishi. More like because whatever I learned with Abhaya, now I know what to outsource. That's what I'd like to think. Yeah, I know what to outsource. It's not like every marketing activity brings you so many sales. It's like it, you know, some of it builds your profile, some of it gets people to talk about your book, some of it builds sales, and you know, it everything has a long term value, right? So that's one thing. But coming back to Your question about whether I would have liked it differently. I mean, frankly speaking, I don't know, Chirag, because reasonably we'd think that with the traditional publishing infrastructure, we'd get, greater exposure, which seems very much possible. But if, there was one article by, India's top literary agent, who's Kanishka Gupta. He had an article published on Scroll on why publishing houses are not able to market debutant books as much as they can market the bestsellers, right?
So in the show notes, like I'll link to it. So if anybody listening who wants to read, they can.
Oh, yeah, that would be useful. That's a very, in a way that article, encourages self-publishing in my view, because the marketing techniques that they use for debutant authors are so non-innovative. I mean, it needs some thought into how to get a new author, out of the just, the typical friends and family zone to the real, in front of real readers. Looking at the techniques that, Kanishka had summarized what publishers use, like some big launch parties are inviting some Bollywood personalities. Yeah, of course the crowds would come for the Bollywood personality and not for the book. And another data point is that it's talk in the industry that Amazon alone it distributes about 30-50% of the trade published literature, the trade literature today. Yeah. So given that, we have to admit that the book discovery has moved online, right? Rather than, of course, stores still play a huge role, but, it's moving online very steadily and constantly moving online. And that is something we all need to realize. And, to market a debutant author as against a best-selling author, the methods should differ and they should be highly innovative. And it's not with making some a trailer which looked like a Bollywood film, or having some a launch gala with drinks, and that money can be used much more effectively on Amazon ads or on the online discovery part. So that's something with, I'm not yet convinced, though I'm sure, there would be great professionals behind marketing, but I'm not fully convinced that traditional publishing houses, are well aware of how to market a debutant author. I wish to be proven wrong, but, I'd be happy to be proven wrong because I think something, whatever they do, I feel, we can also do with greater efficiency, perhaps, if we keep at it. And,
as someone who has seen this a lot, I mean, I've seen so many debutant authors, but I've seen so many authors, maybe not necessarily the best-selling ones, but people who have gone the traditional route and then are moving away from it and are preferring to either self-publish or at least e-publish, simply because they know that it's a new generation, it's a new reach, and it also gives them a little bit of, as you mentioned, it's about efficiency. The amount of money and could be used better, and they, at least the ones that are happy to adopt a sort of a modern approach to these things are doing so.
Exactly. And even marketing is something that keeps evolving, Chirag, because something that worked for, say, Amish Tripathi in 2008 will not work for an author debuting in 2018, right? So yes, that's something which needs constant innovation. And
So I was looking at some stats, right? Of course, not necessarily entirely official estimates, but learned people's estimates or whatever. But they say that, for example, the ebook market is going to go almost three times. I think the estimate is about 350 million by 2019. In 3 years' time, they're expecting it to become 3x, right? So clearly, there is it's a huge market in the opening. We all know what internet penetration is doing in India. In terms of a magnifying ability, I mean, for every 1 or 2% extra penetration, we're talking about, some X percentage of content delivery. It's not just one-to-one kind of thing. So it's super interesting. I mean, we discussed, you and me, before as well about, also we're talking about independent publishers. You have...
Yes, and there's another thing. Now that you mentioned the industry figures, Chirag, from my own studies, again, you know, it's not a total industry figure as such, but going by sales of Abhaya, I mean, I would say that you know, to I published Abhaya towards end of 2015, and maybe those November and December sales were, you know, totally family and friends, you know. So the real readers started buying it in 2016. And if I can recount the numbers, I think by the first half of 2017, I had sold, you know, more than what I sold on, you know, in the whole of 2016. Right. Okay. That's happening. And, you know, every month in 2017, I'm seeing, you know, sustained rate increase. And you know, that's something that speaks about the penetration, as well as Amazon is becoming proactive with author outreach. You know, they are reaching out to us for discount promotions. You know, to be mentioned in newsletters. There are, you know, if you've heard of a success story of Sundari Venkatraman, you know, that's some interesting case. All independent authors should study. And, you know, she's somebody who battled rejections for 13 years, and now, you know, she's publishing on the platform with great efficiency, like, you know, a book every month or every 2 months. I mean, you know, I'm not totally aware of the story, but it's something very inspiring, right? And with each added content, the algorithms start favoring you, right? Because again, after releasing Avishi, which is my second book, I'm seeing a lot of sales happening to Abhaya. So, and you know, with the third book, with the fourth book, I think there's something which that's a time-tested formula, right? With each adding each content, I think you would be seeing it in your own platform. With, you know, with each interview, there is, you know, there's an additional set of listeners.
Yeah, who go back to listen to old episodes. Absolutely, yeah. No, I think it's as a marketing concept, I think it's not been very different, right? I mean, the whole idea, if you look at traditional marketing, where it was about, okay, let me get another product out there and let me, you know, make people like me for this one. And then the ones that like me for this one will probably go back and say, oh, here's another product by the same person. And, but I think what's, you know, what's also really interesting is what used to be, again, you know, traditional publishers doing their thing has now become sort of, you know, much more open. You have, because, you know, authors like you who have taken it to a different height, right? You guys have taken self-publishing to a different level, so that you have these independent publishers. I mean, Indic Book Club comes to mind, obviously, because, you know, they're doing such interesting work with a lot of people. I mean, they've just recently, you know, announced their commissions for, you know, Nupur Sharma, Vivek Agnihotri, and so on, and one of the friends of our show, Dimple Call, who's now got a print edition of the book that she self-published a few months ago.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, yes. And this stuff is very heartening to see.
Oh, very heartening. And Indic Book Club, if I can mention, is really growing, you know, very well. And I'm so happy with the kind of peer support that exists within the group. Yeah, so it's a lot of there's a lot of positivity generated within the author ecosystem, right? It means a lot when another author appreciates your book and shares their learning, you know, and you know, shares the right. It's the whole journey of writing and publishing, you know, goes a notch up when you are associated with, you know, experienced people. Of course, Indic Book Club has a lot of best-selling authors who lend their support and voice when needed, and you know, that helps a lot.
Yeah, it's to me, they're a good example of, you know, the social media sort of collaborative effort that you see, where you have people who have risen up and done something, so happy to share their experience back. And that allows more, you know, more and more, you know, as you said, debutant authors and people who have these ideas, who deserve a voice, you know, and they're starting to get it more and more now.
Oh, yes, yes. And I hope you are following Indic Chat that happens every Sunday.
I am, yes.
That's something I guess I'd never miss, given an opportunity, because it's always pleasure listening to another author share about their journey, because, you know, you can relate so much to it and you can learn so much from it.
as we started this episode, we were talking about sort of, you know, the our traditional culture and the and everything Indic and Indian that we have, I wouldn't say outright lost, but you know, that just sort of lost focus for many, many years, where as I mentioned as well, my own, I mean, the books I read as kids were all English literature. They were foreign English literature, right? They weren't as much that you could find easily or get your hands on as easily as well. I mean, it's a very different case. But it's obviously very heartening to see that it's growing, and that, you know, as the next generation comes out, you know, the stuff is going to be so easily available. I mean, me personally, I mean, when I was talking to Dimple a couple of weeks ago, you know, we were just sharing that, yeah, we, you know, we grew up in the generation where the smell of the pages in a book was what mattered. You know, and so today, even though I read so much online, yes, I read so much of my content online, yeah, I'm still happy. If you really gave me a choice, I would go and pick a book, sure. But you know, it's obviously with time, I'm getting more and more used to it. But the next generation doesn't have that hang up that probably I do, where, you know, they're not even thinking twice about it. They're, for them, having an ebook makes life easy and just, you know.
Oh, you'd be surprised to know a couple of readers, Abhaya and Avishi, had got their septuagenarians and octogenarians who have read Kindle editions. I think I remember another author who said, you know, she taps at the end of the paperback pages also, hoping that they turn.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it is changing. It is changing fast, really. I mean, you know, the amount, like I said, the amount of content I myself consume online today, I mean, I think of it as a slightly unfortunate fact, but it is a bit, because it's saddening to me, perhaps, because of my history and how much I used to read books, that, you know, everything is now inside my iPad or inside a, you know, a device. But it's the truth. It is, I think, 99% of the content I read today is online.
Yeah, it's online, and nothing to feel sad about it, Chirag, because, you know, it's we know that, you know, beautiful content is available to more people, as in, you know, being restricted, you know, in a physical form. And of course, you know, physical books have their own charm, and there's no denying it at all. But it's something like where it's like, okay, you know, to recount another experience, I was looking for, you know, the reference material when I was, you know, writing Avishi. And there were a lot of books that I missed being in London. You know, I had to get them shipped from India or ask a friend to get them, just because the online editions were not available. And, you know, life would have been so easy if the Kindle editions were available. And, you know, they define better reach.
Yeah. No, different, better reach. I think there are some, obviously, I'm going to go a little bit away from our Indic conversation per se, but I'm just going to throw in Game of Thrones in here, because it's a good example for me. But, you know, I mean, I have friends that have read the books, and today I have the ebook, and the ebook gives me something that the traditional book cannot do. It gives me interactive maps. It gives me, like, I can click and, you know, read reference points and all this other stuff. And so there's exactly. No doubt. I mean, that this is the future. There's so much more that can be done compared to a traditional book. You know, you're not sitting and flipping pages back and forth to, like, backtrack, you know, where you read something. Everything is just hyperlinked. I mean, there's, you know, me feeling sad.
Oh,
was,
exactly.
Yeah.
And from an author's point of view, that's something which is, you know, which gives the real, you know, real-time feedback, not exactly real-time feedback, but, you know, because I also have, you know, Abhaya and Avishi on my Kindle, I get updates about what is being highlighted by readers, and that's a unique feedback you get from, that's brilliant. And, you know, I exactly know what my readers, you know, like, and they like to highlight and remember and quote. Right, that is something which was not possible in the, you know, in the era of you know, printed editions. Of course, nothing against print editions.
No, yeah, and same for me as well. I mean, me feeling sad is more just, like I said, it's sort of my hang up more than anything else, right? It's my nostalgia,
right?
Exactly. That, oh man, you know, we're not going to see it, maybe 5 or 10 years down the road. I mean, although it's already happening, but, you know, 5 or 10 years on the, you won't even see the print edition of a certain book that you really want. You know, you won't get it, because it's going to be, and as is true already of books in your books as well, where it's 100% online, right? There is no print edition. So it's more personal nostalgia of, man, you know, I wish I could, like, hold the book. But I think there's no doubt that it opens up a totally different world. So we were talking about independent publishing and self-publishing and things like that. What would you say to someone that is listening in today, either has an idea or has some draft of an idea, you know, and wants to, you know, wants to become an author?
Okay, and what I would like to say from my, you know, experience of publishing two books, you know, well into writing my third book, is that an author, the career as an author is not made with one book. So I think, you know, every writer or aspiring writer should have a plan for the next decade or so, either, you know, either along with a day job or giving up, taking a sabbatical or, you know, whatever they can, you know, the they find suitable to themselves. But the career as an author or as a writer, it is a long-term one. So don't expect miracles to happen around your first book. But as you keep adding content, things will work out beautifully. So as for an independent writer or, you know, self-published writer, I'd say have a publishing plan. Or, you know, as, you know, one of my favorite authors in US, Susan K. Quinn, she's also a very successful independent author. So what she advises is to have a five-year plan for your publishing, right? So, you know, I'd strongly encourage everybody to have a long-term plan when they want to publish each of their stories in whatever format and stick to it. Of course, you know, some miracles can happen, you know, a traditional publishing contract can happen, a lot of things can happen. And of course, another thing is don't romanticize self-publishing as something revolutionary or something against the traditional industry, because, you know, we've grown up reading great books from the traditional industry. It's not like, you know, something we are fighting against, but this is something where we are finding our own journey, our own, you know, we are carving our own career, so we have a lot to be proud of. So keep writing, keep selling, keep learning. The journey is exciting.
Yeah. No, and I think I mean, I know we touched on this already, but as you mentioned, it's almost like being an entrepreneur, right? It's important to have, and your advice actually sort of mirrors that perfectly, right? It's important to have a plan. It's important to think 5 years or maybe 10 years down the road. Kind of stick to it as much as you can. So I think that's super interesting that.
Very successful authors from the West, the one common thing that comes across is they have a constant, you know, they have a very regular publishing plan. Like Rachel Abbott, she publishes her book every February, if I'm, you know. And, you know, Lakshmi Hariharan is somebody who publishes, you know, three novellas every year. And, you know, every 3 months or 4 months, she has her publishing, you know, she has a new book out, a smaller book, not a full-length novel, of course. So, and Sundari Venkatraman, I think she publishes a book every 2 months. Depending upon the genre, depending upon the style of writing, you know, the nature of your readers, I think there is, you know, there's some optimum time gap between the every two books that we write. And, you know, once we are in the groove, we discover all those things, and, you know, we should be sticking to our schedule.
Excellent. Any other thoughts, something we didn't touch on?
Thanks for all the questions. They were really thought provoking. And, I'm glad I could share what all I have, learned in this journey, you know, in the journey of 2 years as being an independent author. And, you know, if I can, end it on a self-promotional note. So listeners, please download Avishi and Abhaya. And there is a discount promotion going on Abhaya Kindle edition. It's available at a 75% off discount at just $24.
Excellent. I will. I will of course have a link to both your books in the show notes, so to make it easy for someone who's listening in. Thank you so much, Esra. I mean, really appreciate you sharing your insights. I hope you know, somewhere someone listening to this, maybe even if not today, but in the future, will take something out of it. So that's awesome.
Oh, I'd be really glad to contribute to the journey of any other independent authors or even traditional authors, Chirag. So thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed interacting with you.
Can you please share us your Twitter handle? How do people follow you?
I tweet at the rate of Sai _Swarupa. And yeah, and there's my, I have a Facebook page. It's Arthur Sai Swarupa.
And of course, to all the listeners, if you guys have questions, topic suggestions, sponsors, whatever it is that you might want to reach us out for, you know, you can get us on at Igdrishti, or you can also email us talk@igdrishti.in. Thank you so much again, Sai Swarupa.
Thank you so much, Chirag, and I'll also be looking forward to the future episodes of Igdrishti, and I think it's a really interesting initiative what you've done. So all the best for the future. Thank you. Thank you so much.